This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
We're going to get pretty practical today, Hal, because we're going to talk to parents who have made that decision. We're going to homeschool this year, and they're looking at that year stretching out ahead of them. They're thinking, uh-oh, what now?
Yeah, and maybe at this time we're recording in August. Maybe back in May or in April when you were at the convention, it all looked really sunny and sparkly and exciting. And now it's like right in the windscreen, and you're thinking, oh, my word, oh, my word, oh, my word, what have I done? What are we actually about to do? And, you know, I think the first thing we can say is you're doing the right thing. Take a deep breath. It's going to be a lot better than you think.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Homeschooling has been such a blessing for our family. It allows us to build the relationships that just will bless you the rest of your life with your kids. It gives you a lot of time with your kids, a lot mm-hmm. of time to disciple them, to get to know them, for them to get to know you, for them to know really all about you. Mm-hmm. You know, to disciple you, to be discipled by you, like, you know, the Lord discipled his disciples. They yeah. worked with him, they lived with him, yeah. they spent time with him.
Right.
It's going to be like that. It's going to be great. But there's a lot of practical stuff between here and there.
Well, you're starting out, okay, it's the start of the school year, and you're doing something entirely new, something entirely different for you and for your kids. And maybe your kids have never been in school. Maybe you're starting with a first grader or a kindergartner. Maybe you've pulled them out of a traditional classroom. You know, you may have an older student. You may have a high schooler that you've brought yeah. home for the first time. But, you know, the interesting thing is there's so much about the first year of homeschooling which is the same regardless of the age of the students involved.
Well, it really is, because, you know, there's some things that you've just got to figure out first and quickly.
Uh-huh.
First of all, a husband and wife really need to be in agreement about the homeschooling. Now, one of them is likely a lot more enthusiastic, and the other one's probably, okay, we'll see.
And it's funny, because as we've gone around and talked with people, we realize it's not necessarily mom's project or dad's project. I mean, sometimes the dad is much more convinced than the mom was.
Right.
You know, and sometimes it's the other way around. Mom's got a vision. She wants to do something with the children, and dad may be saying, I don't know. I'm not so sure. You know, he might be hesitant. So it's not one or the other. It's whoever it is in your own family. That's normal.
Yes.
And yet you do need to come to some sort of agreement, even if one of you is a little more skeptical than the other, at least to say, hey, let's try this for a year. That's something we think is real important, to make a commitment that we're going to do this for this year. And maybe if we're not in total enthusiastic agreement, to say, all right, I won't say we're going to do this until for 12 years coming forward, but let's at least give it this 12 months.
I tell you what, I think that's probably one of the most important decisions you can make. Because there are going to be days that you feel like snatching yourself bald-headed or snatching your kids bald-headed. There's going to be days that are frustrating, that feel like failures. There's going to be times that people question you and you wonder, well, am I really making the right decision? Make a commitment right now. We're going to do this no matter what. If mm-hmm. dad loses his job, if somebody gets cancer, no mm-hmm. matter what happens, yeah. we're going to do this no matter what for the next year. And that way, whenever somebody questions you, you can say, well, you know, we'll talk about that next summer.
Well, you've got to, exactly, you know, to make the commitment so that you don't keep hashing over the basic decision. You know, when you've make a choice and move on with it and say, we'll reevaluate it next May or whatever.
Well, you just really don't want to be one of those families that starts homeschooling and they find it, because they're mad at the school, and they find out in October that it's homeschooling is hard work, so they put their kids back in school, only to find out the schools haven't gotten any better, and they take their kids back out in January. That's bad.
It's bad for the kids.
It's bad for the kids. It's bad for the family. It's bad for everybody.
Right. And so you don't want to do that. You really want to say, we'll make this choice now, and we'll ride it through for a year, because, you know, the first few weeks, the first couple of months are going to be different than the last couple of months in the year.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, what I've seen, too, is that nearly every family that makes it one full year ends up homeschooling for years and years and generally handing their kids a diploma at the end.
You know, in our state, we have to, our law in our state requires that you file certain paperwork with the state and actually open up a private school. It's the way the law is worded. But it's interesting that the oversight agency for many years didn't really keep strict records on the new homeschoolers because they said in their experience watching, you know, what people did, the ones who persisted past the second year were good for the long term. And they said the ones who were uncertain and were going to drop out are likely to do it in the first year or so.
So make a commitment. We're going to do this for the next year.
Right.
You know, the next thing you need to do once you're in agreement and you've made the commitment. And the reason you need to be in agreement is, let me tell you this. I didn't know this at first. Homeschooling is all about spiritual warfare. Because it provides such a great opportunity to disciple your kids, you can expect opposition. And if you and your husband, you and your wife are not in agreement, there's going to be conflict. So get in agreement, okay?
Yeah. And it's going to be a whole lot more successful just between the two of you if you both have agreed, all right, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, you're not going to have, if you stumble on something, if you have a hard day or hard week, one of you doesn't start, you know, shaking their head saying, well, you know, this was going to happen. I could have told you this.
Don't do that.
That's not fair to one another.
So you're in agreement. You've made a commitment for 12 months. Make sure that you're in compliance with the laws of your state.
Well, that's a big one.
It's really important.
Yeah.
And the way to make sure of that is you can go to hslda.org. There's a link on our website, raisingrealmen.com. They will outline your state's requirements, or go to your state homeschool organization. Google the name of your state homeschool organization.
Well,
it should
again,
come up, or there'll be a link from HSLDA.
Yeah, HSLDA. If you are totally brand new to this, learn those five letters. That's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. They have been involved on the front lines helping support homeschoolers in the court system and in their own classrooms since, goodness, when? The early 80s? They've been there forever.
Forever.
And so they are go-to people, and they will tell you, they have on the website, it's very easy to find out what the actual requirements of your law in your particular state are, and any kind of conflicts or resolutions that they've worked through in the legal system and all the rest. You know, sometimes there's a matter of how does that law get interpreted?
Yeah.
And so HSLDA is a great place to go for information.
We highly recommend membership in HSLDA.
Oh, yeah.
They do a great job supporting homeschool freedom and supporting individual homeschool families that are challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then join your state homeschool organization because they're the ones that protect your freedom at the legislature and provide an annual conference, most of them, for you to go to. Join your state homeschool organization and join a local support group. Now, people don't think that important anymore.
Well, let's talk about that a minute because when we started homeschooling, the organizations were where everything happened, especially where you got information. But now there's so much information available online. There's a lot of folks, a lot of the new homeschoolers look around and say, I can Google it. Why do I need to go to a meeting? Why do I need to be in an association or something?
I'll tell you why. Because when you have had a horrible day with your kids, it is wonderfully encouraging to go to your homeschool history club or homeschool band or homeschool 4-H club or whatever and collapse on a bench and say, oh my word, my children were awful today. And have the mom next to you say, you know, my kids have been awful too. I think it's because it's been raining all week and they've got cabin fever, and you realize, oh, it's not me. I'm not a failure at being a homeschooler. This is normal stuff.
And that is, to be able to talk to more experienced homeschoolers and to be able to see them.
Okay, to talk to more experienced homeschoolers when you can see their kids.
I was going to say to be able to visit them in their homes, and you realize that because you have a basket of laundry sitting unfolded on the living room couch does not mean that you're a total failure as and homemaker.
Good grief, I hope not, Hal. That's the least of my problems.
Well, yeah, but you know what? In the Pinterest world, everything is perfect. Everything is ready to publicize.
Yeah, you just can't see the 158 cupcakes they made before they got the two perfect ones.
Precisely. And so it's important to know people in real life, to have associations in real life. You know, if you've got one in association with your church, that's great. But, you know, most places we've been, you know, the churches are more diverse. They don't focus in on the home education aspect as much as.
Now, how do you find one? Let's talk about that. One way is to a local homeschool support group. Ask your state homeschool support group. Most state homeschool organizations have a list of local support groups, and they can help you find one.
And this sounds very old school, but I think it's still valid. Ask at your local public library.
Yeah, a lot of them will know.
Homeschoolers do use the library, probably more than the general population. And so a lot of times, like the children's librarian or the reference librarian might know some people that can get you on the right path.
But your state homeschool support group will know.
Yeah.
They can direct you. They can help you out. Okay, so you're in agreement. You've made a commitment. You've gotten right with your laws.
Yep.
You've made whatever notifications you need to make. You've gotten local support. What now? Now you're looking at these kids and you're thinking, uh-oh, not so much. There are a few things you need to accomplish this year for it to be a successful year.
And this is the funny thing. It's not about your curriculum.
Well, it's partially about your curriculum.
A little bit. But the things, I mean, I think we get this idea that we need to find a program that we feel comfortable teaching and that our kids are comfortable learning from.
And then, well, we think it's got to be perfect. It's got to be the right one.
Mm.
It's probably not going to be the right one this year.
But that's okay.
Okay, let's talk about it. Okay, so what you've got to do this year is you've got to get the basics done, and you've got to do it in such a way that you all develop a love of learning.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about that. By basics, there's a couple of things. The basics are the core subjects. The whatever kind of reading or literature you're
language
working
arts.
With, the language arts part, math.
Yeah, Bible. That's the basics.
Oh, but now you left out one. You left out a big one, didn't you? Science.
Okay, hang on just a minute.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about science.
Okay, we will. Just hang on. Let me get through the basics, okay? The first one is, if you're a Christian, you need to be spending some time in devotions with your kids. You need to be reading them the Word of God. You need to be praying with them. You need to be teaching the songs of the faith. And I really recommend that you do that very first thing in the day.
It kind of sets the tone.
It does. It sets the tone for the whole day. It brings our hearts back in obedience to God's Word. It helps us to handle the disappointments and the frustrations and the bickering and all the things that just happen because we're sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to spend some time in the Word of God first of all. You can use a curriculum for that, but you don't have to have one.
Right.
You know, what we have done for years is we choose a book of the Bible for our family to study through.
Mm-hmm.
I read a small portion.
Like 5 or 6 verses or a paragraph. It depends on what book you're looking at.
Yeah.
You know, if you're reading one of Paul's letters, maybe 3 verses might be a lot.
And if you're reading Old Testament where it's historical, it might be a chapter, 2 or 3 chapters.
Yeah.
So you read a portion of your kids and you explain it to them. And then you might do some Bible memory work or Bible catechism work. And no, we're not Catholics, we're Baptists, but there's a Baptist catechism for kids. Or what I love to do is to sing some songs of the faith with them and teach them those songs that mm-hmm. provides something, some deep heart material for the Lord to use in their lives later.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be long, because if it's too long, you won't do it consistently.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be super long. It just needs to be frequent.
Right.
It's something that you know, when you look at what we think of as the homeschool theme verse from Deuteronomy 6, where it talks about teaching these things to your children as you sit down and as you rise up and as you walk together in the way, you know, that's all day long.
Yeah.
You know, it's all day. It's something that you need to be in pretty frequent contact with just during your daily life. And so
the formal teaching doesn't have to be very long at all.
No. Okay, so Bible first.
Yeah.
And then, you know what? It's not just the fact that they're just basic core foundational curriculum, but the fact is reading, especially in the early years, is something that develops in sequence.
Well,
math is something that happens in a sequence.
Well, and reading and math are the tools of learning.
Yeah.
You know, once a child is reading and writing well and can do arithmetic well, they can really teach themselves anything at that point. And so it's very important that they get those tools of learning. Now, if you have a high schooler, if you're pulling a high schooler out, that's going to be very different. High schooler, you've got to be looking for what are they going to do when they get out of high school, and what do I need to do with them now to prepare them for that?
And I think we need to go into some depth on that, but let's do that after the break.
Well, no.
What?
The high school thing, I don't think we really need to go in depth with that right now.
No.
I want to talk about, if you've got children, because very few people pull their kids out of school in high school. There's okay. some that do, but very, very few.
All right.
Instead, let's talk about, you've got middle school and younger kids, mm-hmm. and you are saying, okay, what have I got to get done this year? We'll talk about that after the break. Is that all right?
Okay, that'll work. Okay. All right, very good. As you are looking at your year coming up, you may be thinking, I'm not really comfortable teaching all of the subjects that we've got planned.
Well, that's the really cool thing about homeschooling is I don't have to know everything myself. I just have to know where to get the information.
Okay.
And SchoolhouseTeachers.com provides over 200 courses that you can do with your kids or your kids can do on their own right there in your house without leaving your house, mm-hmm. without finding babysitters or driving somewhere, right there on your computer. At no additional charge. Once you paid for SchoolhouseTeachers.com, it's very affordable.
Yeah.
All those classes are free.
And we've done some online classes other places, and they've been excellent classes, but expensive is the word.
They're typically $500 each, $350 to $500 each.
And with Schoolhouse Teachers, one low monthly fee, you can use as many classes as your homeschool can digest.
Right.
All at the same rate, as many students as you want to bring in from your family. This is a great thing. So we want to encourage you, check out SchoolhouseTeachers.com and see what this great resource is.
And also, you get their schoolhouse planners free as part of your membership.
Oh, there's a bonus.
And so what we're going to be talking about next with planning your homeschool makes it much easier with Schoolhouse Teachers. You're going to love it. Okay, so this goes on up. Tell them how Melanie sent you. So I'm not going to deal with high school. We just don't have time for that today, and very few people are there.
I'm sorry to distract you.
Okay. But let's talk about, you've got middle school and under kids. You've got to have curricula for them in the language arts, which are reading, writing, arithmetic, I mean, which are reading, writing, spelling that kind of stuff, and in math.
Okay.
And that can be very scary, Hal. I know that it's kind of silly, but I remember totally freaking out when you're over what spelling curriculum to use.
I remember that.
And the funny thing about it is the child that I was choosing it for never spelled a word wrong in his whole life.
He had a natural knack for it, and he read so much.
And so what did it matter what curriculum I used? It's ridiculous. And yet, we're so scared we're going to make a mistake with our kids that we freak out about curriculum. Here's the deal. If they were in school, they would be using whatever curriculum the committee in your state capitol finally settled on. Whether it was the right one or not, whether it was good or not, whether it suited their learning style or not.
And I remember some that were real dogs.
Well, you can hardly do worse than that.
Yeah.
This year, you're probably not going to choose the perfect curriculum. That's okay. You'll know a lot better in 9 months. Mm-hmm. It's all right. Choose something that is attractive to you, that you like the looks of, and make sure you've got something solid in the language arts and in math. Mm-hmm. And just let me tell you this. If you're freaked out about a certain subject, do not go cheap with that subject. If there's a subject that you're afraid of, choose a very nice, attractive, colorful curriculum that will tell you exactly what to do.
And you know what? This is something, let me address this to the moms. I found out a lot of moms are doing most of the curriculum choice, which they're going to be doing the teaching, so that makes sense. But a lot of them come to the book fairs, they come to the catalogs full of fear and trepidation, not just about the decision, what will I choose, but what am I going to invest money in? And we find a lot of times when you're dealing with the dads, when the dads are in the equation, dads are a lot freer to say, hey, let's buy a tool that works. You know, if this is a better program, why save $10 or $20 getting something that's not going to work as well?
Well, dads have had the expense of trying to fix something with the wrong tool. They get that.
And so this is something where mom and dad can come together and sometimes can be a lot more efficient and can make a better choice in the end with a lot more freedom, let's say.
Well, so we're going to choose a curriculum and then we're going to focus on making sure at least the basics get done. And you're thinking, well, what about science? What about history? You know what? Science and history are fantastic, but they don't have a specific sequence that you have to do things in. You know, in some states, you study your state history in the fourth grade. In others, it might be the fifth grade or the third grade. It doesn't really matter. And so you have more freedom in science and in history. And the truth of the matter is, if you have an elementary school kid and you didn't get any history or science done this year, it's really easy to catch up next year. It's not that big a deal. So what you want to do with those is you want to use those to build the love of learning, because hell, if they don't build the love of learning, school's going to be a battle the rest of the time they're homeschooling.
But, you know, things like science and history open up the doors for so many great hands-on projects.
Oh, for fun.
So many great field trips. So much fun stuff. And, you know, frankly, it's a little harder to get excited about fractions.
Yeah.
But to say, hey, we're going to go see where something historic happened, or we're going to go to the museum and see a demonstration of this really neat scientific principle, or hey, let's sprout some plants under glass and see what happens underground. And,
right.
You know, you can do so many cool things. And the neat thing about that is those are not grade specific. And so that's a way that if you've got multiple kids, and who doesn't really, most of us do, that you can bring two or three different grade levels together and say, let's do this hands-on project and learn to identify constellations, or go do this field trip, or research this particular person.
Absolutely. I totally recommend that if you have that all your kids middle school age and under should have the same history and same science as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Because this is something you want to do as a family. You want to do hands-on stuff. You want to go on field trips. You want to read real books. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of getting a history textbook that breaks it all down into identical chunks that are indigestible.
Yuck.
Instead, you want to say you're going to study the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
Well, then you're going to get George Washington's World, and you're going to get the Dallaire's George Washington. You're going to get a ton of great
books.
You're going
to read Johnny Tremaine. You're going to do
on a bunch of different levels.
Right.
You're going to watch movies about the Revolutionary War. You know, if you live on the East Coast, you might go to some Revolutionary War sites.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to do live like a Revolutionary War soldier for a weekend.
Uh-huh.
You know, make some Revolutionary Era treats or play some Colonial Era games. There's mm-hmm. just so many things that you can do. And those things, the activities, the hands-on stuff, give your kids mental hooks to hang the rest of the knowledge on.
Well, isn't that what Charlotte Mason talked about? You know, especially with the younger children, about giving them something to think about.
Yes.
Something to love, something to look out and say, you know, the world is beautiful, and history is interesting, and science is exciting, and all these kind of things, because they've handled it, and they've felt it, and they've smelled it, and tasted it. And then when you go back and say, now let's memorize the dates. Well, that's okay. I can put the dates together because I understand the events, the stories.
And it's just so much easier to teach a child who loves to learn. Now, if you have a preschooler and you're starting in school, homeschooling is their first educational experience, mm-hmm. they're going to have a natural love of learning.
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to push them too fast and too hard into formal stuff. If you have a question about that, there's a workshop on our site called Homeschooling from the Beginning that'll mm-hmm. be a help to you mm-hmm. to know when it's right to start formal stuff.
Right.
But they're going to have a natural love of learning. If you're taking a child out of school, they mm-hmm. might have learned to equate education and learning with boredom.
Yes, and so
and tedium.
And so you've got to do some recovery here.
Yeah.
You've got to recover the love of learning, because learning is a good thing. And so you have to kind of restore something that's been beat down or stepped on.
One great way to do that, particularly with middle school kids, is to take something they're interested in and to explore that. For example, we had a son who, when he was like 9 or 10, became fascinated mm-hmm. with raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what could you do with that? You could have a bird study.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are homeschool science textbooks centered around flying things.
Yeah.
You know, you could study birds. You could go to your your cooperative extension agent.
Yeah.
And usually they'll be able to loan you an incubator and give you fertile eggs so that you can hatch chicks. Then they'll take the chicks back when you're done.
Oh yeah, or maybe you've got a child who's just fascinated with the Civil War. Okay, go ahead.
Let me tell a few more things about birds. I'm going to give them a bunch of ideas.
Go
can
ahead,
I talk
ahead,
a little
ahead,
bit more?
Go ahead.
Okay, so you can build a bird house. You can build a bird feeder. You can put together a suet feeder.
Yeah.
You can get bird guides and identify the birds that come to your feeder.
Uh-huh.
You can go to your Museum of Natural History in your state, and like ours has a whole room that has like bird pelts that you can look at, and you can handle the feathers and look at them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a billion different things you can do connected with this. You can order owl pellets and look and see what that owl ate. You know, there's a zillion different hands-on things you can do, and those hands-on things build a lot of learning, like you were talking about if they're interested in the Civil War.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just thinking, you know, if they're interested in that military thing, then you can use that as a springboard to say, well, have you thought about how science and technology entered into that war? You know, how was the telegraph was new technology. How did that enter into it? Was the railroad, railroads were fairly new transportation means. How did that enter into it? The Gatling gun that was developed during that time, you know, the effective submarines, you know, for undersea craft and things like that. I mean, there's so many
ironclad ships.
So many things that come into that, which, you know, frankly,
combine history and science.
Combine history and science and culture and such. You know, you can read Uncle Tom's Cabin, and you can read some of the other things that were written at the time that contributed to that whole culture and
Country Diary of an Edwardian Lady.
Okay, yeah.
You can read all kinds of things and help you to understand what was really happening. And as kids get beyond the idea that learning history is just memorizing boring facts.
Yeah.
When they understand it's about real people and it's story and it's the impact of culture and scripture and tradition and science and all these things coming together. You know what? Teaching a kid like that, you really don't even hardly have to teach them. They'll go out and grab the facts for themselves.
Amazing what they will pick up.
Yes.
Okay, so all of these things. Okay, so really, your first year in homeschooling, you can kind of take a breath a little bit. You don't need to launch off, especially middle schoolers and under, and say, we're going to do seven subjects for each grade level.
No, please don't do that.
But really to say, look, there's core things we have to get. We got to get our language arts. We got to get our math. We got to get our Bible in there. And then other things we can do more creatively.
Yeah, have fun. And don't worry.
And you know what? Because you're going to be rebuilding their love for learning. But there's something else that you're going to be doing during this time, too, that doesn't meet with curriculum at all. And that is, you're going to be building relationships.
And that's something we really need to talk about before we go, because a lot of kids who've been in school will wonder, do I really have to do math if it's just mama telling me to?
Well, and a lot of times, you know, what they learn in school is to be guarded, to be secretive, to keep their feelings to themselves and not to trust, because frankly, the school environment can be kind of harsh.
Yeah.
And so to be in a safe situation, you know, to say, hey, you can open up. Nobody's going to make fun of you here. We're not going to let anybody bully you here. You're at home among people who love you, and we're going to make sure that everybody treats one another with love.
But you also have to get your schoolwork done.
And reestablishing that idea that, hey, your parents are your parents, and you can no longer say, well, my teacher said this when I'm at home, and then they're at school, he said, well, my parents said that. That doesn't work when the parents and teachers are the same people.
And if your kid says that, don't panic. Just calmly say to him, well, I understand that, but you see, now I'm your teacher.
Yep.
And I said that you need to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And they may give you some pushback, but don't worry about it. Just remember, you're the teacher. You're in charge, just like you're in charge of their bedtime or what they eat for supper or anything else. It's no different than that. You just expect obedience, you require obedience, and you discipline non-obedience.
Wow. Yeah. And it's as simple as that. Well, actually, we say simple. That may be the most important thing going on, because I know that some days we look back at some days we get to the end of the day and feel like, I didn't accomplish nearly what we planned for this day. And yet, those were the days that we built character. And not making it up. Those were the days where we worked on character issues, where we dealt with the child's heart. And actually, at the end of the day, they were better people in character, even if they maybe didn't mark off everything in their academic planner. But they were better in character and closer to one another and closer to the Lord. That was a successful day. And you know what? That would not have happened if they were sitting in a classroom somewhere surrounded by 20 other kids the same age.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is, for me, I think that is really the most important fruit of homeschooling. Homeschooling, you know, teaching the academic subjects at home, that can be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of work.
And it's very successful.
It can be very effective. And yet the most important thing is that we are discipling our children and teaching them to walk after God's ways. And the way we have the opportunity to do that is because by taking on this academic load, we're recapturing 35 hours a week out of their schedule where they are under our care, under our teaching, under our discipling, loving ministry to our children. And that, wow, you can't trade money for that.
No, it's incredible. It's so valuable. Listen, don't panic. It's going to be okay. You're going to get this done. and you're going to enjoy it.
So look, a couple of resources you might like on our website, if you go to www.raisingrealmen.com. If you go to our store, there's several workshops that might be useful here. There's homeschooling from the beginning.
For parents of like grade 2 and under and preschoolers, there is 3 simple goals for your first year,
right,
which is takes what we talked about tonight, because into greater detail, gives you more practical help, talks about planning and your school day and things like that too.
And if you've got multiple grade levels, there's one called Homeschooling a Houseful.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, this lady here with me has 8 children, and she has homeschooled all of them from the beginning, and you had 6 different grade levels going and a toddler underfoot and a nursing baby at the same time.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so I'm married to Superwoman, but you don't have to be, because you can be a Superwoman too, or a super dad if you're in that situation. So I want to encourage you, go out and look at that at www.raisingrealmen.com. And also, if you like what you're hearing here and you want to see it stay on the air and you want to support this ministry, go to www.patreon.com, patreon.com/Hal and Melanie, because we have a Patreon system out there for our regular supporters and our donors and patrons, and some neat benefits if you want to sign on for that. So until next time, we are glad for you joining us, and we'll be talking about making biblical principles a reality in your family. So I hope you'll join us again. Until then, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
Thanks so much.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie. Or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.